Welcome to the June 2024 edition of Agribusiness News, brought to you by the Farm Advisory Service. My name is Christine Beaton. Agribusiness News helps you to scan your horizons, prepare for industry changes, and keeps you abreast of the latest research and policy updates. Along with our regular monthly updates and policy briefs, arable beef, sheep, and milk, in this edition, we are also bringing you sector overviews on the new tiers for agricultural support, carbon calculators. We will also be bringing you news on forage first circulars and land registration in Scotland. First up, we have this month's news. With barbecue season upon us, lamb prices are currently smoking hot, with no signs of cooling in the short term linked to high levels of demand as the Muslim festival of sacrifice approaches. However, with beef supplies currently exceeding demand, to avoid an own goal, this month's beef article highlights the importance of linking marketing campaigns to big sporting events like Euro 2024 to subtly drive up demand for all cuts of meat. With the Agriculture and Rural Communities Bill now at the third and final stage in the consultation process, this month's article on future agricultural support gives an overview of the proposed move from a 2 to a 4-tier support system: base, enhanced, elective, and complementary, potentially adding a new avian-sounding acronym, BEAC, to our everyday vocabulary. This month's policy brief section highlights the inclusion of new grant conditions linked to the Scottish Government's Fair Work First policies for workers and the UK-wide action plan to try to reduce the threat of antimicrobial resistance. When it comes to staking your claim from a land management perspective, our article this month on land registration highlights that for a land-based exercise, it isn't always plain sailing. And with the show season underway and election campaigns starting to ramp up, all eyes and ears are on how each political party factors in the importance of UK agriculture, not just in terms of its importance in feeding the nation, but the important role it plays in managing the countryside and in supporting the rural economy. To end on a lighter note, with the choice of the 4th of July as the election date and its connotations with the American Independence Day, some in Scotland might see this as a sign of things to come. Others might be associating the date with impending fireworks. And for those fans of the 1996 film Independence Day, the association could be of stepping up so that aliens do not try to invade and ruin our land. Moving on to this month's policy briefs. First up is the Fair Work First grant conditions. Under the Fair Work conditions introduced by the Scottish Government on the 1st of April 2024, organisations applying for some public sector grants will be required to pay their staff at least the real living wage and also to provide appropriate channels to give workers an effective voice. While this legal requirement has already been introduced for farmers and crofters applying for grant support under the Crofting Agricultural Grant Scheme, CAGS, and the Forestry Grant Scheme, where funding is allocated, the Fair Work conditionality will be applied from the opening of the next application window for three other grant schemes: the Agri-Environment Climate Scheme, EECS, the Food Processing Marketing and Cooperation Scheme, and the Sustainable Agricultural Capital Grant Scheme. Businesses intending to apply for any of these five grant schemes should read the Fair Work First guidance if they are awarded a contract for grant support, as they will need to comply with the principles of Fair Work First. You can find a link in the show notes. The Scottish Government is supporting a new UK-wide joint action plan to contain and control resistance to antibiotics. Antimicrobial resistance, or AMR, is one of the World Health Organization's top global public health threats and arises when organisms can infect and evolve ways to survive antibiotic treatment. The 5-year Antimicrobial Resistance Action Plan sets out key measures to reduce the threat of infection across human, animal, environment, and food sectors from microbes including bacteria, fungi, viruses, and parasites. The 2024 to 2029 plan has four key themes. 1. Reducing the need for an unintentional exposure to antimicrobials. 2. Optimising the use of antibiotics. 3. Investing in innovation and technology. And 4. Being a good global partner. While the Antimicrobial Resistance Action Plan covers both livestock and people, two interesting lines of questions included in the research priorities outlined in the plan are: firstly, How have reductions in the use of antibiotics in food-producing animals affected antibiotic resistance in people and animals? And secondly, what are the risks associated with the use of antibiotics and antifungals on crops, particularly in low and middle-income countries, and the downstream impact on the environment, humans and animals? Going forward, while some of the plan activity will be specifically focused on reducing antimicrobial resistance, other measures will focus on preventative measures, including improving animal health and reducing the incidence of infectious diseases. Please find a link to the Antimicrobial Resistance National Action Plan in the show notes. With around 1.1 million hens currently being housed in cages in Scotland, the Scottish Government has launched a consultation on phasing out the use of cages to house laying hens for egg production. Views are being sought on phasing out the use of enriched cages, which offer more room to nest, roost, scratch and rest compared to the previously used battery cages. For a link to the consultation, please see the show notes. The consultation period closes on Tuesday the 25th of June 2024. MSPs have backed legislation giving councils a new power to introduce a visitor levy that would raise funding for local visitor facilities and services. The new Visitor Levy Scotland Bill will enable local authorities to apply a levy on overnight stays, with all money raised to be invested in services and facilities largely used by tourists and business visitors. Councils that want to introduce a visitor levy will be able to do so after they've consulted with local communities and businesses and tourism organisations. An 18-month implementation period will then apply before any local authorities can introduce a visitor levy scheme in their area. Key policy dates to note. June Census 2024 opened online on the 1st of June and ends on the 30th of June 2024. EECS application deadline for organic conversion and maintenance is the 10th of June 2024. The standalone application deadline is the 31st of July 2024. EECS application deadline for the 2024 Agri-Environment Plans is also the 10th of June 2024. The closing date for the Scottish Government Capital Grant Scheme Survey is the 12th of June 2024. Moving on to arable. In 2023, production in the UK of all major cereal crops declined. The wheat harvest was estimated at 14 million tonnes, a 10% decrease from 2022, while oat production fell by 18% to 830,000 tonnes. Barley production was just under 7 million tonnes, down 5.7%, and rapeseed production dropped by 11% to 1.2 million tonnes. The reduction in wheat production included a 5.1% decrease in the wheat growing area to 1.7 million hectares, as farmers shifted towards barley and rapeseed, both of which saw increased plantings in 2023. The UK wheat yield also declined by 5.2% to 8.1 tonnes per hectare. Looking ahead to 2024, the wheat growing area is expected to shrink by 15% to 1.463 million hectares, the smallest since 2020. Barley production in 2023 saw a 9.9% drop in the spring barley to 3.8 million tonnes and a slight 0.2% decrease in winter barley to 3.2 million tonnes. Despite an increase in the area planted for both, yields fell by 10% for spring barley and by 4.5% for winter barley. In 2024, the total barley area is projected to rise by 8% to 1.236 million hectares, with a significant decline in the winter barley area offset by an increase in the spring barley plantings. Winter barley is estimated at 355,000 hectares, a 22% reduction, while in contrast, spring barley plantings are forecasted to increase by 29%. Oat production in 2023 hits its lowest level since 2016 due to a 5.1% reduction in area and a 13% decline in yield. For 2024, the oat growing area is expected to increase by 26% to 209,000 hectares, with the drop in winter plantings more than compensated by a sharp rise in the spring plantings. However, only 37% of the winter oat crop is rated as good or excellent. Rapeseed production also fell in 2023, with a 7.2% increase in area, insufficient to offset a 17% yield decline. The total area for 2024 is expected to decrease by 28%, reflecting the poor autumn and winter growing conditions. The projected 280,000 hectares would be the smallest area since 1984. In addition to which, only 31% of the winter oilseed rape crop is rated as good or excellent, indicating poor national harvest prospects. Given the current wheat crop conditions, with only 34% rated as good or excellent, wheat imports could exceed 2 million tonnes in 2023-2024, the highest level since 2020-2021. From July to January, wheat imports totaled 1.251 million tonnes, a 55% increase year on year. Although most imports are high protein milling wheat, the flour milling industry continues to consolidate. Currently, there are 32 companies operating 51 mills, with the four largest companies accounting for 65% of UK flour production. Global grain markets rallied in May due to dry conditions in Russia affecting crop prospects. However, the bullish momentum has waned of late with recent rains, despite the ongoing market volatility, which is being driven by weather impacts on crop production. The International Grains Council reduced its forecast for 2024-2025 global wheat output by 3 million tonnes to 795 million tonnes, following downgrades to the Russian and Ukrainian crop outlooks to 85.5 million tonnes and 23.7 million tonnes from previous estimates of 90.4 million tonnes and 24.5 million tonnes respectively. As May closed out, the UK feed wheat futures gained less than the global market, influenced by sterling's rise against the euro and the US dollar. November 2024 UK feed wheat futures increased by £16 per tonne over the last 2 weeks of May, closing at the time of writing at £218 per tonne. For the maize market, planting progress in Europe and the US remains a key focus, alongside concerns over the Brazilian harvest. Despite expectations of heavy maize supplies in the long term, the ongoing wheat concerns could drive additional feed demand towards maize. The global oilseed markets rose last week, led by soy meal and rapeseed. Concerns about crop sizes in major producing countries continue to extend rapeseed's price premium over soybeans. Predictions of a drawdown in rapeseed stocks also support rapeseed prices compared to soybeans. The Scottish finished beef price in May has remained below £5 per kilo deadweight, sitting at £4.94 per kilo for steers, down 3 pence per kilo from the previous week, and at £4.95 per kilo for heifers for an R4L grading for the week ending May 18. Prices throughout May have fluctuated, with Angus premiums falling short of the £5 per kilo deadweight. Price variations are being reported depending on processor, with reports suggesting that prices are not just dependent on supply, but also breed, spec, and customer loyalty. Despite cattle availability in Scotland being tighter this spring due to the numbers of store cattle being sold into England in 2023 and suckler cow numbers declining, in recent weeks, demand has relaxed from processors, with reports suggesting that cattle supplies are greater than forecasted, coupled with little demand for steak meat. Young bulls will start to come on stream now, which will help lift numbers over the coming months, while steer and heifer availability looks to remain tight. However, finishers are likely to resist offloading cattle, which usually happens when the fat price drops. Going forward, it is unlikely that prices will drop much further, given the availability of cattle across Europe, and the forecast that Irish beef production will continue to decline following a fall of 4.5% in 2023. Prime cattle availability traditionally drops in the summer months as sheds empty, and it is still early days for finishing cattle to be sold off grass. Therefore, finishers will be hopeful of a lift in prices, especially for those who bought expensive store cattle this spring. Cow-cow prices remain strong, with R4L prices sitting around £4.10 per kilo. Seasonal demand will influence the trade for cull cows in the coming months as we move into the barbecue season, with demand looking to be higher in comparison to the wet summer of 2023 and the expectation that the Euro 2024 football competition will drive demand for grilling products. While producers will be very conscious that greater demand for cheaper cuts, such as burgers, could create carcass balance issues, this is where good national marketing campaigns can have a real effect in subtly driving up demand for higher value cuts of meat. Grass fever has hit the store ring, with improved grass growth boosting demand for grazing types. However, several markets have reported a slight easing in trade, which is most probably linked to a drop in the finished price. Prices remain strong for heavier stores. Funded by the University Innovation Fund, A Date for Your Diary is SEC's consulting Big Beef Roadshow on Tuesday the 11th of June at Knock and Jig Farm, Sanker, Dumfriesshire, by kind permission of the Walker family. The meeting will focus on timely and topical discussions on herd fertility, feed efficiency, animal health and welfare, an update on cattle EID, and the outlook for the beef market. Local vets from SRUC and SEC consultants will lead technical speaker sessions in the morning with a farm tour in the afternoon. Please find a link in the show notes for more information. Moving on to sheep. The lamb marketing roller coaster continues to gain strength as we transition onto new season lambs. The week ending the 18th of May had an SQQ price of £9.27 per kilo, which is an 8.4 pence per kilo rise on the week and a staggering £1.84 per kilo rise since May 2023. With global supplies tightening and the Muslim Festival of Sacrifice approaching on the 16th to the 18th of June, when will the heat of this trade cool off? For the week ending the 18th of May, the GB lamb price stood at 9.78 euros per kilo, which was 16 cents per kilo higher than the French price of 9.63 euros per kilo and a whopping 6.26 euros per kilo higher than the New Zealand price of 3.52 euros per kilo. In New Zealand, Beef and Lamb New Zealand have predicted a 54% decrease in profit for many New Zealand sheep farms due to their poor lamb price. This has largely been due to low domestic demand and poor export trade, coupled with lower carcass weights due to drought conditions. In addition to which, as the Chinese market has favoured Australian lamb, this has vastly reduced the volume exported to China from New Zealand. The poor lamb and mutton prices in New Zealand and the effect on cash flow are now flowing through low returns on breeding and feeding stock, compounding financial problems. In contrast, the Australian flock is going from strength to strength, with the 2024 crop of lambs predicted to show a record production level, potentially 20% higher than the 10-year average, showing a rise of 4% on 2023 to reach 620,000 tonnes. However, the flock is forecasted to decrease by 3% in 2024. The main export markets for Australia remain China, USA, Malaysia, and the Middle East. Bearing in mind there is a free trade agreement between Australia and the UK, although imports to the UK for the January to March 2024 were 3,500 tonnes, 65% higher than 2023, they were lower than in 2022, showing the markets closer to Australia are more favourable. The European Commission has recently published their spring short-term outlook, a link for which is in the show notes. The report forecasts that the UK export market will remain stable, with the demand from Middle Eastern countries reducing due to them favouring Australian lamb. Imports into the EU rose by 2.2% in 2023, largely linked to imports from the UK and New Zealand. A further increase of 2.5% is forecasted for 2024. Overall, the European flock is in decline, with the Spanish flock leading with a forecast reduction of 6.1%, which equates to around a million sheep. The Spanish flock currently accounts for 25% of sheep meat production in the EU. We will now move on to the sector focus and agricultural support. Since leaving the EU in 2020, each of the UK's four nations have been working to develop their own systems of agricultural support to replace the CAP, Common Agricultural Policy. The direction of travel for Scottish policy is laid out in the Vision for Agriculture, a link for which is in the show notes. In Scotland, the four key objectives are supporting food production, enhancing biodiversity, adapting to climate change, and ensuring a just transition. The Agriculture and Rural Communities Bill, a link for which is in the show notes, is now at stage three of the consultation process, having incorporated amendments from farming bodies in Scotland. At stage three, MSPs can propose further amendments before votes are cast on whether or not the bill should be passed. However, while the bill forms a framework of principles under which agriculture and rural support will be developed, details of the scheme design and implementation are still in progress. Included in this policy formulation is the consideration of the suitability of continuing to use the three-region system in allocating Tier 1 payments, given the evolved priorities of targeting payments since the existing model was developed. While food production is still a key outcome of Tier 1, revision or reform might be considered more appropriate for reflecting farming's contribution to other policy outcomes, such as climate and biodiversity management. The system will now move from 2 to 4 tiers of payments, Tier 1 replacing the existing basic payments, including conditionality, and Tier 2 providing enhanced payments for climate, nature, and other benefits. These will comprise of at least 70% of future support, with the remaining amount allocated to Tier 3 elective and Tier 4 complementary for additional and targeted environmental, social, and business initiatives. While the decision to retain a similar and equivalent basic payment scheme beyond 2026 is welcomed by the farming sector, especially given that Tiers 3 and 4 will open up funding for historically less supported but important sectors of Scotland, such as pigs, poultry, horticulture, and potatoes, environmental groups argue that a greater share of payments should be designated to climate and nature outcomes. However, the degree of environmental conditionality across tiers and schemes is yet to be determined and could still reflect this ambition. One of the biggest concerns around future support is how the details of the schemes and applications will affect producers, particularly small producers, where it may create disproportionate burden for implementation. Another key concern is the risk of green investment encouraging agriculture to sell carbon assets and/or data, particularly with increasing pressure from supply chains for Scope 3 emissions reporting. With technology essential to create an enabling environment for innovations and reporting on biodiversity and environmental impacts for the sector, it could be argued that private investment would be better channeled to technological transformation opportunities. Lastly, in the consultation stage of the Agriculture and Rural Communities Bill, there was also division in respondent submissions as to whether non-agricultural practices on agricultural land, for example, woodland and peatland management, should receive support or not. Now let's move on to milk. The peak production time has now passed, with a daily high of 37.33 million litres for Great Britain reported on the 12th of May. This compares to a high of 37.57 million litres on the 5th of May 2023. The latest GB monthly milk production data from AHDB is estimated at 1,075 million litres for April, 0.9% down on the March volume. Daily deliveries were 36.57 million litres for the week ending the 18th of May, just 0.2% below the previous week and 0.5% down on the same week in 2023. The UK milk volume for April was 1,318 million litres, 0.7% less than in March and 1.1% less than in April 2023. The DEFRA average farm gate milk price for April was 37.21 pence per litre, 0.21 pence per litre down on the March price. The most up-to-date milk prices from the main Scottish milk buyers available at the time of writing are as follows. Please note that the prices are in pence per litre. First Milk Manufacturing, 39.5. Müller, Müller Direct Scotland, 38. Graham's, 36. Arla Farmers Manufacturing, 40.45. Lactalis Fresh Milk Company, 38.5. U-Tree, volume litres, 37. The latest UK wholesale dairy commodity prices were all up from the previous month. The lower than expected milk volumes at this time of year and concerns about future stocks stimulated more buying activity. Sentiment is more positive now, highlighted by the latest global dairy trade auction returning its fourth increase in a row, with the average price across all products sold reaching $3,861 per tonne. For the first time in 4 months, the milk market value indicator increased up 0.86 pence per litre to 36.54 pence per litre for May. Recently, grass growth rates have rocketed and are now exceeding those at this time last year, and are also higher than the five-year average as reported by GrassCheck GB. The current daily grass growth rate on dairy farms was 91.7 kilos of dry matter per hectare for the week of the 20th of May. Across Scottish dairy, beef and sheep farms, daily grass growth was 79 kilos of dry matter per hectare. Nutritional quality is good, with crude protein content at 18.1% and ME at 11.1 megajoules per kilo of dry matter. With weather favourable for rapid growth, the challenge is maintaining grass quality for the next grazing round and mowing. Topping swards may be necessary to achieve the desired residual. For a 650 kilo cow, current grass quality should support maintenance plus 19 litres based on 16 kilos of grass dry matter intake per day. Given the wet winter and spring, mineral levels in grass and silage may be lower this year, leading to an increased risk of deficiency. Grassland that had been underwater has lower oxygen levels and therefore will have a reduced mineral uptake from the soil. Levels of antagonists such as iron and molybdenum will also be higher, reducing absorption of trace elements from the gut, particularly copper. Therefore, it is worth getting fresh grass and silage sampled this year and analysed for minerals to ensure the current supplementation is meeting requirements. If in doubt, speak to your nutritionist about a mineral audit, and blood testing can also be useful to confirm any deficiencies in livestock. Farm gate milk prices are likely to be slower to recover than previously thought, according to a recent report by Rabobank. Chinese net dairy imports are expected to fall by 8% in 2024, mainly from declines in skimmed milk powder. And with their growing domestic production combined with weaker global demand, global milk price recovery has slowed. High interest rates and inflation continue to be above target in many countries, putting pressure on consumer spending. However, exports of butter and cheese are faring much better than skim milk powder, and current levels of demand are expected to be maintained. With prices for straights such as soya and maize looking to remain stable or even fall in the second half of 2024, margins over purchase feeds should improve from where they were 6 months ago. If you're enjoying agribusiness news, why not try one of our new farm advisory podcasts called In Conversation With? The second episode, which was released in May, includes an interview with Poppy Frater, Senior Sheep Consultant with SEC Consulting, and Kerr Adams, a research scientist with the James Hutton Institute. They discuss grass and water management and how to manage grass growth and maximise productivity.
Hello, my name is Brady Stevens, and I wrote this month's article on carbon calculators. Carbon calculators help farms to estimate their greenhouse gas emissions and highlight ways to reduce them, a hugely important tool towards tackling agricultural emissions and achieving net zero for the whole economy. UK farmers have been encouraged and incentivized to undertake farm carbon audits for a number of years. However, farmers have been feeding back that the calculators on the market can return different results for the same farm, leading to questions about their consistency and trustworthiness. In January 2024, the UK Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs, or DEFRA, published a report titled Harmonization of Carbon Accounting Tools for Agriculture. Please find a link in the show notes. The report shortlisted six calculators, which are used most by British farmers. The report investigated what drives the differences in their results, with the goal of harmonizing or bringing them in line with each other. The six tools were each tested on 20 farms, covering the nine most common types of British farming. The report confirmed that the tools can indeed output different emissions estimations for the same farm. These differences are a result of factors including the boundaries on which parts of the farm business are included in calculators, the precision to which calculators use emissions factors, or reference figures used to model farm emissions, how soil carbon sequestration is handled, and the third-party review standards to which they align. Because these differences in methodology are more relevant to some farming types than others, there is greater divergence among some types of farms. For example, those with organic and peaty soils, where more soya feed is used, lowland beef and sheep enterprises, but more consistent results among others, for example, dairy systems. If different calculators give different results, which can a farmer trust as a decision-making tool? Whilst differences persist, the report highlights that these calculators are still trustworthy and following their recommendations will help farmers reduce emissions. The climate crisis requires urgent action and farmers should not delay in engaging with these tools. However, it is worth taking the time to make an informed decision. Farmers should ask questions about how suitable a calculator is for their type of farming and the outcomes they are looking to achieve. While reducing emissions is the goal of engaging with these calculators, achieving more efficient use of resources and farm inputs boosts the profitability of farm enterprises. Therefore, farmers should ask their farm advisor if they are aware of or have considered the differences between the tools available for carbon audits. While farmers get better results from learning about the inputs, methodologies, and outputs of these calculators, it is the companies behind the calculators who have the responsibility of improving the accuracy of their methods and making sure all tools on the market are robust and trustworthy. The DEFRA report makes several asks, including for industry and government, to define which parts of farm businesses should be included in farm-level assessments, and for calculators to increase transparency to drive increased understanding of emission sources. Several tools have published articles which address the recommendations made in the report head-on, tracking progress and giving timelines for when they hope to fully comply with the report's standards. As calculators take action to implement the recommendations, it is reasonable to expect more consistency between results in the future. As before, the most important thing is for farms to choose a calculator which suits their enterprise type and stick with the same one, as this is the only way to establish a robust baseline and monitor change over time.
Let's move on to Forage First Sucklers. The new Forage First Suckler Systems Guide by SEC Consulting, funded by the University Innovation Fund, UIF, provides advice on how to develop a low-cost forage-based suckler cow system that achieves high utilization of grazing resources, optimizes output, productivity, and reduces wintering costs to promote profitability. Pasture can meet the nutritional requirements of a suckler cow at all stages of production, support growth rates of over 1.3 kilos per day in calves to weaning, and greater than this in growing and finishing stock to finish them at 18 months with the right genetics. To achieve a low-cost forage-only suckler system, whilst optimizing output and profit per hectare, producers should 1. Best match animal demands with pasture supply by calving in the spring. 2. Run a tight calving period of 6 to 9 weeks. 3. Use rotational grazing to gain control over pasture, optimize utilization and quality, and to extend the grazing season. 4. Review low-cost wintering options. And 5. Run appropriate genetics that suit the system. Producers should aim to time calving, mating and lactation with peak pasture growth in the spring and summer in order to meet the highest demands of pasture. When pasture growth drops in the autumn, so does feed demand of the cow post-weaning. It costs 44 pence per day more, which is around 34% more, to meet the nutritional requirements of a lactating cow of 12.9 kilos of dry matter, 1.71 pence per day, compared to a dry cow of 9.5 kilos of dry matter, 1.27 pence per day on a silage diet. Therefore, calving should be timed to best match spring pasture growth so that the cows can be turned out and are stocked to calve outdoors on sufficient pasture covers, that is 5 to 6 centimetres, to avoid the need to supplement. Set stocking is wasteful, providing poor pasture utilisation and control over quality. To extend the grazing and reduce wintering costs, cattle must be on a rotational grazing system, as this optimises production per hectare while also carrying over more cover into the autumn. Housing costs aside, winter feed costs for many conventional systems are crippling, with an 180-day winter costing as much as £229 per cow in silage alone, based on a £26 per tonne fresh weight. To make suckler cows more profitable, we must 1. Extend the grazing season to reduce the winter feeding period, and 2. Assess winter feeding strategies to reduce feed and housing costs, for example, through the use of deferred grazing, bale grazing, and or forage crops. In the autumn, every day cows are out still grazing pasture saves £1.27 per cow in silage alone. For a 100 cow herd, this amounts to £127 and another £18.30 in straw if housed on bedded courts. Putting up an electric wire to subdivide grazing into 1 to 3 day shifts pays dividends, as an extra week outside for a herd of 100 cows could save £1,017 in silage and straw alone. Even better, daily shifts will both improve utilisation and reduce the poaching risk through reduced grazing duration. Planned deferred grazing involves setting aside or stockpiling pasture in the summer to allow covers to build up to 15 centimetres for grazing in the autumn and winter. This is allowing a growing number of farms to dramatically reduce their wintering costs. However, deferred grazing is only appropriate if soil type and rainfall are suitable for winter grazing without causing damage to the existing sward or soil. Strip or paddock grazing reduces wastage, making pasture go further. If the acreage is limited, grazing days can be extended by supplementary feeding, including placing bales out prior to the winter. The shut-off date affects both yields and feed quality. Shutting off in spring and early summer maximises yield but sacrifices quality. Standing hay is best suited to dry cows. Shutting off in spring-summer is poor use of improved ground due to loss of production potential, so more appropriate for hill ground. Shutting off from July onwards, post-silage, generates lower yields but a higher quality feed, ideal for dry cows and better suited to young stock. Both digital and physical copies of the guide are now available. Please email livestock@sec.co.uk to get your free copy. You can also find the details in the show notes. Finally, moving on to land registration in Scotland. Who owns Scotland? The Registers of Scotland, ROS, are currently undertaking a mammoth task of digitally registering Scotland's titles to add them to the Land Register of Scotland, which was created in 1981. The Land Register replaces the General Register of Saisine, which was created in 1617 and holds many historic titles. The Land Register can be accessed online and is free to view at scotlist.ros.gov.uk. Please find a link in the show notes. Properties can be searched for by postcode, title number, or by map, and digital titles can be bought for a small fee through the register website. The purpose of moving to a digital register has many positives. Older titles quite often only have a written description with no maps and use outdated terminology, which can make modern interpretation very challenging. A digital register using Ordnance Survey mapping ensures that, like a jigsaw puzzle, all the registered parcels of land fit in beside each other. It also allows for an opportunity to merge titles in the case where a business has bought several land parcels over decades of time, or indeed separate them if that is what is required. It then makes matters such as succession and selling a much smoother process in respect of the legal aspect, as solicitors have access to an up-to-date register which can make transactions much easier. There are several ways a property can be added to the land register. It can be triggered when a property is sold or transferred, which has been happening since the 1990s. Where properties have been in the family for generations, such as estates and farms, owners can volunteer to register their property. ROS are offering a discounted registration rate to encourage landowners to consider this option. Finally, it is understood that ROS are working through the Saisine Register to move properties onto the land register. However, this route will be a lengthy process and is expected to take many years. It should be known that there are additional costs when undertaking the voluntary registration. There would be preparation of digital maps and a fee for a solicitor to submit to the ROS. The fee for voluntary registration is calculated on the current value of the land and can range from £60 to a staggering £6,190. Understandably, the cost of registration can be inhibitive. However, it should be noted that for many landowners, their property is the biggest asset and registration provides a degree of protection. However, there have been cases where the land has been registered and occasionally the boundary has been incorrect, necessitating the neighbouring property to dispute the accuracy of the registration, resulting in additional legal costs. Registering your land can ensure peace of mind that your boundaries are precise, but it can also guarantee that the land is in order for future generations to inherit. For further information on the legislation, registration fees, or to see if your land is on the land register, please go to www.ros.gov.uk. You can also find details in the show notes. Thanks very much for listening to this audio edition of the June 2024 Agribusiness News. Remember to like Agribusiness News to get notified of future episodes of this monthly podcast. The written version of Agribusiness News publication was edited by Christine Beaton and included articles by Christine Beaton, Mark Bowser-Gibbs, Sarah Balfour, Kirsten Williams, Anna Sellers, Lorna McPherson, Brady Stephen, Daniel Stout and Jennifer Galloway. The podcast was presented by myself, Christine Beaton, produced by Alistair Trail, edited by Cameron Waugh, and the executive producer is Kerry Hammond. This podcast is part of the Scottish Farm Advisory Service and produced in association with the Scottish Government.